Gabriel here. I have one question this spring morning. Are you afraid? I ask this because for the last couple of months, I have been as afraid as I was during the 2020 virus scare era. It's fascinating to me because this time around, I am pleased to report that I feel better equipped to deal with that terror. For those who are living under a rock or are listening to this far in the future, it is mid-2026, and wars and rumors of wars are certainly escalating. There are related energy issues and concerns about shortages and price hikes in relation to various geopolitical events. I would say if you are paying attention and not terrified, it is probably not because you are terribly brave, but you are merely just numb. And I'm sharing this because during 2020, I was in a state of absolute panic. My terror, my fear was far beyond my capacity to handle it. Over the course of my weight loss journey, I have learned just how important it is to self-regulate and how important it is to absorb and manage various stressors, because I realized that the deeper root of my emotional eating was a more general response to respond to any stress or any disruption with food. And so in the process of unpacking that, I have been working diligently to reflect on what gives rise to these impulses. What are the things that cause me stress, both big and large, and also the smaller stuff? And what can I do to address it? In fact, what I've learned a great deal is that it's a very hard problem to solve. I can confidently report that I am doing better this time around. I don't know if it's down to experience. I don't know if it's down to me just being more active or simply having accepted how little control I have over the big picture. On some levels, one of the more calming ideas I've come across lately is the perspective that these big giant political chessboard games are outside of my jurisdiction. I am certainly opposed to these wars. If I was consulted, I would have certainly vetoed them. But on the other hand, it is also important for my sanity to acknowledge that I don't really have an impact on these circumstances. And so it leads me to kind of think about what is my responsibility? What should I be focused on in this time that has me honestly so worried, so terrified? And why am I able to withstand it slightly better this time around? If anything, I should feel worse off this time around. I have less resources, have less capacity in some ways. I have less time for things, and I am feeling more disillusioned on my ability to have an impact. These were all things that worried me at the time and have certainly not improved since then. But what I've learned is that ultimately, feeling safe on some level is an illusion. I've learned that trying to absorb these shocks that are bigger than us in some ways itself is placing too high a demand on ourselves. Because one of the things I remember from the 2020 time was that people would say, oh, don't be afraid, just throw out your TV, which was hilarious in my circumstance because I was not terrified of the virus propaganda, of the health scare, and all that. I was afraid of what the government would do when it seized power in the state of an emergency. And I think, unfortunately, much of that came out. You know, there was talks of camps at the time, and even people in Australia were actually put into some of those makeshift camps for a time. And so the thing is that wartime is absolutely no joke. I think if we thought the COVID years were bad and disruptive, I think there is a lot of good reasons to be concerned that this upcoming worldwide conflagration has the capacity to be a great deal worse. And one of the things that always comes out of these crises is that the public is afraid. The public is terrified, and they really just reach for the easy solution that is presented to them. And in the circles I pay attention to, the public tends to be derided quite a bit for this. And unfortunately, I think it is a mistake, because I don't think it's a good strategy to tell people who are terrified, oh, they just shouldn't be afraid. They should just rise above it somehow, as if they were capable of it and they just simply all simultaneously chose not to do the thing that would make everything better. My mental model of this now is that the public, by design, I'll add, is more or less running at peak capacity. Our societal system does everything it can to extract whatever utility it can out of people, and they make compromises to fit into that machine. People are competing by sacrificing various intangibles, their loved ones, their families, their connections with the community, whatever it is. All these things kind of fade to the background as people just try to stay afloat in the rat race, so to speak. And so it leads to this scenario where if you really try to empathize with, you know, the general public and where they are day to day and the struggles that people have day to day, it really is no wonder that they have very little capacity to absorb any massive shocks, especially once they are so far gone enough that it has risen to the public's attention. Because by the time a crisis is so, let's just say, ubiquitous, that it actually has the public's attention as something worth addressing, generally at that point it is bad enough that the urgency is real. The urgency is probably even warranted, whether or not the pre-chosen path is the correct one or not. In fact, you can always bet on the readily made solution being the wrong one. But what is it that actually gives the tyrants and the authoritarians their power? It's not actually the public's fear. And this is the fine distinction I want to make here, is that it is not the fear itself. We are not fighting people's emotions. We are not fighting their ability to feel those emotions. We should be fighting the way in which those emotions sap their capacity to think rationally. And I can certainly attest to this myself. When I was in 2020, panicked out of my mind, I made some absolutely silly panic purchases that I regret. I did a lot of things I would certainly want to do over. And fundamentally, when you're in such a bad place, when you're, you know, not only you're in a bad place, but everyone you know is in that bad place, it does change things. And I have to give one of my old coworkers credit, because prior to COVID, prior to 2020, he was lecturing me about the politics of fear and how when everyone around you is afraid, it is a very different ball game than one would think. And I remember saying at the time that fear was a choice, and him being older and wiser than me said, "You'd think so, but wait and see." And oh boy, I suddenly realized exactly what he was talking about during the 2020 years. And so, on some level, I do think there is an illusion of choice when it comes to fear, because some of us are going to be, for whatever reasons, better able to process fear to particular things at certain times. We should be very thankful that humanity is not an entire monolith with the exact same responses to everything, and that there will be cooler heads during those times. I think what frustrates people is that when they have cooler heads, it feels like nobody listens to them. And I think what drives that, beyond the fact that public, you know, may or may not have any capacity to engage with somebody was trying to tell them their fear is unfounded, it's important to recognize that the intellectual exercise of dismantling the intellectual foundation of the factual foundation of the propaganda is largely a journalistic and historical exercise. The way I understand it is that when you are talking with friends and family, ultimately we are not operating on that level. A general conversation doesn't generally have footnotes. A person-to-person interaction has less to do with the intellectual, scholarly background and more to do with our relations with each other. And so when people are terrified out of their minds because it's everywhere, it's omnipresent, they see it when they drive to work, throughout their work day, it's humming in the background with their worries. They come home, they, you know, turn on the news or listen to a podcast, and it's everywhere. And so when they go to you and say, "Hey, I'm really scared about this thing," and you just tell them, "Oh, just don't be afraid, man. It's all fake, or none of it's real," or whatever, however you wish to dismiss it, either factually or whether just as a way to get it out of their mind, ultimately you are demonstrating to them that you are not somebody they can connect with and feel understood. And I believe the way you actually disarm fear is not by dismantling the rational reasons behind why the person is seeing the fear, but actually merely showing, not just saying, but actually showing the person that you're willing to be there for them through it. Because what happens in our minds, as I understand it, is that that panic response is generally born out of an understanding that you yourself cannot unilaterally resolve the situation. We all throughout our lifetime develop various coping strategies and proactive solutions to certain problems. It is clear that not all problems are enough to completely destabilize us. So what is the difference? And I think what it is that when a person encounters a problem, whatever it is, that far, far exceeds their capacity, their agency, like what they actually have control over, that creates panic. And the way you diffuse that panic, in my mind, is you do so by bringing yourself to the table and saying, "You know what, maybe you don't have this all together, but I am here with you. I am also another person who also sees your concerns and is also trying to do what I can about it. And depending on the scale of the problem, what's going on, at least that other person knows that it's not all up to them. They are not the lone figure standing against whatever future apocalypse or calamity that people are afraid of." And this, I think, is the fundamental way to disarm totalitarians, tyrants, and authoritarians writ large. Because what they all rely on is that moment to panic. They rely on devising a simplistic solution to a problem that involves ceding power and autonomy to the person or structure. And it is presented just in the nick of the time when panic is at its peak. And so to the degree we can actually oppose some of these insane top-down abuses, I think an underappreciated strategy in these times is learning to actually be there for the people who are whipped up in all of it. And in fact, this isn't even really a new idea. There are some darker applications to this knowledge, which is that unfortunately, it appears to me that you can calm people down from things that should and should not be addressed. For instance, it obviously seems like a good thing to do that when somebody is whipped up over something that is contrived or something that is going to be used against them, calming them down seems like a great idea. But there's another side of this where, say, somebody is panicked out of a real, serious concern, something that actually does have real stakes and is actually dire and does actually need to be addressed. And so what can happen, and I believe the power structure has already spent a great deal of time refining as a tactic, is you can use the same methods to contain that feeling. And so, for instance, this is why in political movements and activism, you'll hear people talk about controlled opposition, you'll hear people talking about release valves, pressure valves, because what the system seems to do quite effectively is the issues it does not want people to, let's just say, take too much action on, they will provide lip service if they ever see the public beginning to grow weary and concerned about those things. For instance, here in Canada, the public is very concerned about the cost of living difficulties writ large. And the fact of the matter is that all parties will say, oh yes, the cost of living crisis is a serious deal. But is that really the same thing as actually meaningfully addressing it? And so I think we should also be cautious on some level about how people are being, you know, kind of neutralized on things that are urgent and dire. But I don't believe the answer is to spend our own time amplifying fear and panic, because if anything, it seems that that terror, that urgency, that panic always creates the incentive and the compulsion to reach for simplistic, immediate answers rather than actual long-term nuanced solutions. And I notice this all the time because, especially right now in the technology freedom space, there is this huge desire just to swap out things that are known to be bad with things that, oh, are just simply better substitutes. And in truth, I actually think that many of these substitutes are wholly well-intended projects. The challenge is, I think things have gotten so bad that the entire paradigm itself is the problem. I don't think we can continue in an era where technology is something that people interact with entirely as a consumer-based model. I actually do think that for a better digital future, we do need some aspect of co-creation. These can't just be consumer devices. They do need to be, on some level, a personal craft, a personal pursuit, a personal whatever. And that doesn't mean it has to be difficult. I'm not saying everybody has to learn how to solder, code, and engineer, though, I mean, certainly I would like to live in a world where that's the case, but I think more practically, it's the mere fact that the system itself is kind of in a take it or leave it state. And I think with more customizability, you know, all the things that brought me to Linux in the first place, those are the kind of attributes that we really need to double down on and refine. But simply swapping out something that fits into the current paradigm with an alternative that is less harmful, I think is actually a good thing. But people recognize that this is wholly insufficient to address the underlying root issues. And I think for many problems in society, we are very much hitting the wall of substitutes being enough to forestall the consequences of the root issues. But this all takes me back to my biggest frustration with the 2020 and 2021 years, where people in so-called freedom circles would love to tell people, oh, it's just, you know, if you're afraid, you're part of the problem. If you, and basically deriding anybody who saw what their eyes were telling them and was in any way worried about it and maybe even panicked. I think it's important for those of us who recognize these problems to adopt a more proactive stance towards helping people who are going to be taken advantage of. It is no surprise to me that those who were afraid of the virus scare and those who were terrified of abuse by institutions and governments during the COVID years, they were all taken advantage of. They were all in various ways by various people, by different systems, all taken advantage of because that panic, that, you know, fear reaching outside their capacity is what allowed them to be taken in by malevolent forces, both big and small. That was really a fascinating and honestly highly troubling lesson to learn. And so I think we have a responsibility to those people. I think actually those of us who are calm in a crisis, those of us who are able to absorb the shocks on a particular issue that is being used to manufacture consent for malevolent ends, I don't think we just get to sit back and say, oh, look at those fools being afraid and giving the tyrants all their power. Wouldn't the world be better if they weren't like that? You know, I think we actually have a real active role to play. I think we have to reach out to those people and tell them, look, you are actually totally right to be terrified of all this stuff. And we have to, instead of putting our motives ahead of them, we kind of have to, you know, do what we can to connect with them and show them, hey, these things are awful, these things are scary, but we can work through it. We can remind each other that nothing is so important that it requires us to set aside rational inquiry. We're not calling to dismiss the problems. We're not calling to just forget things and push things aside. We're not calling to numb other people. I think the ideal approach is to specifically speak to their concerns and make them feel understood, recognized, so that when they are eventually brought down from that panic, then we can have a more nuanced discussion about what the better ways forward are. And ultimately, I think this really needs to be the goal, that by being there for other people in difficult times, we actually rob the authoritarians of the foot soldiers that they use to enforce their edicts. If people were not feeling so isolated, so dehumanized, they would not feel the need to kneel towards tyrants who are more than willing to turn them into living weapons. This is why, over the last little while, in my attempts to reclaim my humanity, I have learned that on some level, your humanity isn't your own. I have learned that being a person is not a solitary endeavor. It is something you have to do with others, and that's strange and unfamiliar to me. maybe this is just my years-long isolation speaking, and you know, people in general understand this better. I certainly hope so, but for me personally, it has been quite a long road to realizing that it takes a lot more than just avoiding what we're afraid of. It takes a lot more than just demanding people act out in the ways we want. And I say all this because I care a lot about tech freedom. I care a lot about how systems work to, you know, tyrannize people and whatnot. I guess you could say I am hoping to be a problem for tyrants, both big and small, on some level. But I realize we have to be careful not to turn against the people who are under the spell, so to speak. I think for those of us who see through the games, for those of us who are equipped with pattern recognition and threat detection in our minds, it is much easier for us to suss out those with bad intentions. But the challenge is that for those who are in a moment of difficult times, when they are at their capacity, even if they possess those threat detection abilities, they certainly are worse off. They are less effective in those times. And it is important that we, instead of trying to control other people by saying, you have to do what I want because that's freedom, bro, we have to more concretely imagine what it is in us to build that other person back up so that they can be themselves again. Ultimately, that's what we really want. We don't want, you know, carbon copies of ourselves in every aspect of life and these things. We should recognize that by being there for somebody else in these difficult times, it is not to recruit them into our army and have them be the fodder for our agenda. We actually need to consider a different strategy. If we want a world where, you know, bottom-up culture thrives, that human beings co-create the world we live in, we can't seize all the power for ourselves. We can't play the same game that the tyrants are playing. And that's what I think fundamentally needs to change in, you know, general freedom fighting movements. I think people who want to resist tyrants and authoritarians very often make compromises and they make trade-offs where it's like, oh, if I play the same game, I can get enough power to make yourselves feel safe. But kind of like I said earlier, I think that safety is always an illusion. The tyrants can always, you know, use mayhem and destruction to destabilize things, and that's as true as it's ever been. If anything, it's even more true now. And so what we should seek is not actually a feeling of, oh, I have enough people on my side and we have enough power to defeat our enemies. I don't actually think that's the way to address this game. I think what it actually requires is an understanding that we can build each other up to be not just individually, but together more resistant to these shocks. We can build our own and each other's capacity. And all of that takes actual work. It takes time. It doesn't happen overnight. It is not one of those easy, quick fixes where I can make an easy and quick reel that everybody listens to and acts on. That's not how it works. It is a personal, individual, and relational exercise of getting to know the people around us, getting to know the people we're in contact with, and being willing to engage on a deeper level and be supportive. It requires us to give part of ourselves to each other and actually bring that feeling of safety that is weaponized against people. And I think it's a hard order. I think in an age where families have been eviscerated, opportunities are sparse, and scarcity feels rampant, I certainly understand how tall an order that actually is. I am under no illusions that this is a difficult and complex process. But I think there is no other way. I actually don't believe that simply intellectually or brutishly telling people, oh, you shouldn't worry about that, is enough to take away the advantages that the tyrants have during difficult times. I think it is paramount that we think about what we can do for each other with what capacity we have and what we can do to actually address the root issues of all these problems and crises that come up. And that is a much more difficult exercise. It takes more time. It takes being willing to listen to perspectives that aren't our own. To summarize, I wholeheartedly believe that fear itself actually is not the enemy. The enemy is the way in which fear controls people and how we can actually work directly against that by building each other's capacity to endure shocks. It requires acts of generosity, kindness, and mercy, and patience, fundamentally. We need to be able to sit with others who are in the deep depths of panic and fear, and it requires actually a pretty proactive effort to reach out to those who don't share our perspective so that we can, you know, kind of echo that throughout society rather than it all just being down to people who, like, we personally know. You know, you kind of need to build up other people so they can build up others. And so I think the hardest part about this journey is that it's unsatisfying. You will never know your impact in a truly decentralized endeavor, no matter what it is. And you, on some level, have to take it on faith that doing the right thing for its sake itself will actually yield better results. And so I apologize for the navel-gazing nature of this monologue. I've been thinking about this quite a bit, but I am optimistic that things will get better, even though in many ways things are getting worse. I think there is a huge amount of potential to build these positive feedback loops after they have been forgotten. And I think the capacity for things to get better when that happens is actually way better than we think. And I think we are actually not as far gone as we may think. I think it is very easy for things to turn around and that the darkness that we fear is certainly not inevitable. There are many possibilities that lead us to a better situation. I just think it is the adventure of a lifetime to spend our time exploring what can be done, what can turn things around, what new potential possibilities can exist. Is very much worth our time, I think.